We have questions from different parts of the world. And good morning, everyone.
Yes, the first question is from Enakshi Didi. During my stay in ashram, the association with dear devotees had taught me a lot about spiritual life and has shown me how important it is to proceed practicing and not to give up when some difficulties might appear. And it seemed to be quite easy since minimum of mundane life was involved. Yet I have found myself again in Western world. Here everybody is eager to care about career, earn more money, show oneself as the most intelligent, qualified, skilled, often acting not in a most fair way. How under these circumstances not to lose a significant willingness to devotion?
It's a wonderful question, and our dandavats to Enakshi Didi. We thank you for watching and supporting us in our humble efforts, and we miss you already. And what you're experiencing is what we all feel when we leave the association of the Vaishnavas. Some separation anxiety is there, and feeling very much overwhelmed by the materialistic current of the world, and feeling the opposite direction. The world is going in. So the main important necessity is Vaishnava association. And when we're away from that, we're away from them, we'll feel very much overwhelmed by these currents of the external world and feeling so bereft out of their association. So ideally we try to structure our lives in such a way where we're not isolated from the Vaishnavas, where we're always getting Vaishnava association and good, favorable, uplifting Vaishnava association, those who are superior to us, that kind of association. So I know it's your idea to come back, and we are waiting for you to return. And in the meantime, we know you're finishing your school, and you can do so many things to help yourself in separation from the devotees. These things will help you to hear and chant and remember Hari Guru and Vaishnava, and join our classes, watch the videos, listen to all the audio available online. And you're busy in service to beauty over power, and that's very wonderful service that will keep you connected and always hearing. You'll be hearing Goswami Maharaj speak, and you're transcribing and doing so many things surrounding his lectures, and you'll get much inspiration that way and strength that way. And also you've been given the holy name of Krishna. Chant that attentively, carefully, and everything you eat, offer it to Guru and Krishna. And try to make the best of your situation. And when the time is right, when you finish your thesis, come back as soon as possible. And we're waiting with open arms.
Addition to this question, are those difficulties I'm facing at the moment some kind of vetting?
Vetting. I forgot what the word vetting means. Anyone know? Difficult?
Trying
like situation. Best. Sure, of course. We can see everything difficult coming to test us and to deepen our appreciation and to make us stronger. And absence can make the heart grow fonder.
So what you're experiencing after being submerged in devotee association, receiving the holy name, so much sadhu sangha, now you're back on your own in a very materialistic society. So you're dealing with the infusion of spiritual nourishment and energy you received, and you're there in your situation. You can see that as a test to overcome. I can do this. I can survive the rest of my time here. Make it your goal to survive and to keep trying and keep contact. Call all the Vaishnavas and keep in touch and do your best to overcome this situation. And it's very common. Many devotees all over the world are living in remote parts of the world and on their own. So it's not an ideal situation, but make the best of it and take all those suggestions I gave. Try and apply them.
Next question. People who are not in Krishna consciousness are searching for the truth as well. In general, is it better to follow at least some kind of religion if it's not about Krishna? Like nothing, something is better than nothing.
Yes, definitely. And it says in the Upanishads, what religion will increase your love of God? That's your religion. It's a very broad, non-sectarian statement given by the Upanishads. And it's the truth. Whatever philosophy, religious conception, teachings, spiritual teachings will give you love of God and uplift you, that's for you. That kind of hope is there. That said, we know there's gradation everywhere. And yes, something is better than nothing. Better to have a little faith, a little bit of spiritual practice than nothing. Do something to uplift yourself and to pull yourself up out of mundane consciousness, material consciousness. So, yes, it is true. And, of course, why settle for anything less but the best? So if you have the freedom to search and discover for the ultimate absolute truth, then do it. Don't just settle for anything. Try to find the highest conception of divinity and a living source. And go for the gold. Don't settle for anything else. That's my answer.
Next question from Induleka. If someone is doing something bad but says that he is doing it because of his karma, how can I convince him not to do it?
Well, I mean, what if he thinks it's his karma but he's just justifying that, making some justification for doing something wrong? That's possible. But it's also possible sometimes our karma can have a hold on us, can grab hold of us, and we're under its law, its force. And the only way to overcome that is through the grace of Guru and the Vaishnavas. So we take more shelter of them when we're being surrounded by our karma. We call out their names, we stay in their association and take shelter of them. But no one can cheat us more than our own self. That could be a factor here. Justifying things just because we're weak and we're not so sincere. We have to be honest within ourselves and not cheat our own self.
Could you please give a very simple but very impressive proof for the existence of the soul?
Simple proof of the existence of the soul. Well, some people can see the soul. In English, it's been translated as seers, who can actually see beyond material vision, not having limitation and having transcendental vision. They can see the soul within. And they can see when the soul comes out of the body and the body becomes lifeless. It's no longer alive when the soul leaves the body. So there's some people with special vision who can see that. But for ordinary, average people, you need faith. Faith must be there, that's the basis. Without faith, you cannot give evidence and proof. That's the giver of evidence, is faith. Then you'll see for yourself through faithful eyes, faithful vision. So I remember Gurudev once, someone showed him a picture of a big skeleton. Maybe it was a hoax on the internet. Some like gigantic skeleton. They were saying it was some kind of creature from Treta Yuga or Satya Yuga. Do you remember who that was? I forgot his name. Some personality that was massive. Maybe mentioned in the Ramayana or Mahabharata. Here's proof that this person existed. Vedic evidence. And Gurudev said, we don't need this kind of proof. We have faith. And that's greater and more substantial. And any kind of scientific proof is not what we're after. And even if we have that, maybe people won't even believe that. So it requires sukriti, faith and fortune to believe. So we try to distribute that as humble servants and aspiring devotees, we are trying to extend what we have to others, bring about awareness in society and humanity. And who is favorable and faithful and interested, they will receive this mercy. Okay.
If service is done just because it's needed to be done, not out of some high feelings or inspiration, is it okay?
Can you read it again? Sorry. I was thinking something else.
If service is done just because it's needed to be done, not out of some high feelings or inspiration, is it okay?
Yes. What are we supposed to do in the beginning? We're not going to join the mission with high feelings, are we? We all come as newcomers, as aspiring devotees, as practitioners. We're student practitioners, and we begin our practicing lives through following orders, instructions, maintaining principles, and beginning in neophyte stages. So we can't expect high feelings to come at any point in our devotional lives, even after 20, 30, 40 years. Maybe no high feelings will come. Maybe several lifetimes, no high feelings will come to us. So we accept that we are bereft, and we begin our practicing lives and make some advancement, go through whatever purification is required from us, endure all everything that needs to be endured. And progress comes through elimination and new acceptance. We eliminate what is not favorable for us, and we accept what is favorable. Then this begins our practicing lives, step by step, maybe like baby steps in the beginning. Then we can learn to walk properly, to run. But in the infant stage, we cannot expect to be full of devotion and ecstasy, going about our service in the temple. It's unlikely, and not to expect it. Be happy being at least amongst the Vaishnavas and having a service opportunity, having good association, and everything good will come. Okay?
Is it said that where you can feel the clean flow, the truth, there you must go? What if someone's words or even presence speaks right to your heart? How can you make a distinction between if you feel it with your senses or with your heart?
Yes. We can always confirm with a higher source, then we'll know for sure. A higher source can confirm, yes, this is some flow coming to you, and it's divine, or no, that's your own mind. When in doubt, ask for higher guidance. And generally, in the neophyte stage, we're not experiencing divine flows, not so quickly. It's a more intermediate stage of development. An advanced devotee will feel some divine flow coming and some inspiration coming, being able to see Guru anywhere, everywhere. That's not a neophyte stage. That's an intermediate position. So we have to be realistic and sober, understanding who we are, estimating who we are, assessing who we are and where we're at. Not overestimating and thinking we can detect Guru everywhere, even in the strangers. We could find ourselves in difficulty if we overestimate our capacity to understand what is real, what is substantial. So we're careful and we stay under guidance, and we're better off that way. Okay.
It is said in the Golden Volcano, chapter 3, that the soul gets most benefit when it serves the Lord as the negative particle to the supreme positive. How about those yogis who want to merge and become one with the Lord? Aren't they happy? Or you can see the great just from afar when you close to it? And same, is it better to serve than to become one with the Lord and get the service?
Yes, it's better to serve the Lord. There you will have your real self, your real personality, and ecstatic, loving service engagement in a particular relationship with the Lord. All personal, all higher grade conception. It's not of a lower type like samadhi, mukti, merging into the oneness. That's a lower conception, and it's like a dreamless sleep. No differentiation, no personality. Everything's merged, and it's like being in suspense and slumber. And that's not a very happy situation. It's just painless. No pleasure, no pain, no personality. That's not our goal. And it's also not the goal of all yogis. Yogis tend to worship the Paramatma, they're not Mayavadis, generally. There's some difference. The yogis meditate on within Shanta Rasa, and a neutral mood and meditative. And there is happiness there. That's superior than mukti and nirvana, samadhi. That's of a lower type. And that's like one type of danger we avoid. We avoid at all costs being involved or associated with any kind of impersonalist. So, not to confuse the yogis and the Mayavadis. They're not the same. And personal relationship, ecstatic, loving service engagement to Krishna, to Mahaprabhu, Radharani, that's supreme. Nothing is higher than that. Nothing's more personal and happy and ecstatic than that. And that's where we should focus our attention. Okay.
Next is my question. Mm-hmm. Gurudev's Vyasa Puja is coming, and we would like to hear about him from you. We heard that, and we experience also that the guru sometimes affectionately chastised the disciple. Mm-hmm. Did Gurudev chastise you?
Sure.
Could you please tell us some of these?
I know, can't say all of it was just because he was being affectionate. I mean, ultimately, yes, but some of it was my stupidity. Sometimes I did stupid things in his association. And one thing we all share, we struggled with the light switches. He really had a thing for the wrong switch, and he had a switchboard. Maharaj was talking about this. Trivikram Maharaj was talking about it. Goswami Maharaj talks. We've all been through this with him, of turning the wrong light switch, and that would really annoy him. And we've all done it. And one time I did the wrong one, And he told me, that is why you came to Krishna consciousness. Because you can't even turn a light off. You can't make the right switch. So you came here. And then I just stayed quiet. We've all been through this. But then a few years later, I did the same thing. A few years later. And I learned by staying with him that he likes when we quote him and bring it back and let him know we're paying attention. And so I did it again several years later, turned the wrong switch. I turned on the fan when I was supposed to turn off the light. And he looked at me like getting angry and about to say something, and I said, that's why I came to Krishna consciousness. Because I can't turn the light off. That's why I'm here. And he just laughed, big belly laughter. Showing him, this is a few years later, I remembered what you said, and I'm applying it, and it's true, telling you what you told me. And he was very happy and laughed. It was very wonderful to make him laugh. And he had such a big belly laughter coming from down here, big laughter. But there were some not funny times also. There were some scary times in his association. Where we're living and growing all young, wild, different types of personalities living with him. Sometimes making mistakes and doing silly things, sometimes offensive things. And nothing really more is coming to mind on the chastisement, other than sometimes seeing it in his eyes were so deep and like ancient. You can look into his eyes, you don't see any end. It just goes on, and like very mystical. And he could just penetrate and see right through you. And just a glance could practically kill you. If looks could kill, he definitely had that ability. Penetrating you and just annihilating you just with a glance. You knew. I have to watch it, be careful what I say, what I do, what I think. It was my service for several years to serve as his secretary. And I had to go in and out of his room and try to present his letters to him. And he's always busy and always doing something, and it's not always the right time. So I had to go and do like a mood check. What's his mood? What is he doing? What's going on? Is this the right time? Sometimes it took such a long time to give one answer to somebody. A yes or no. What to speak of a full letter composed, a reply to their inquiries. So maybe more will come to mind. But we were dealing with, living with him was dealing with an infinite personality without limitations. And anything was possible at any moment. Very spontaneous. You never knew what was going to happen next. And where he would appear next, what he will do, what will he say. So we had to become very flexible in his service and in his association. So maybe more will come to mind later. Yes.
Question coming from the internet. It is said that sometimes soul impressions come to the external world and become even more bright than the external impressions. Like Dhruva, the king, first he saw the Lord in his heart and then with his eyes. Can you comment on this? How is it possible?
What was the first part again?
It is said that sometimes soul's impressions come to the external world and become even more bright than the external impressions.
The internal impressions,
yes.
More bright than the external.
Mm.
Yes, it's possible. I can't really speak so elaborately on that. Maybe the yogis experience this more. They're always in the world within, meditating on Super Soul, Paramatma, living in the complete internal reality, not in this external world. But for a Krishna Bhakta, for a Vaishnava and a Paramahamsa Vaishnava, of course, within gradation, their internal, external will be seamless. They're being completely engulfed in Krishna consciousness. So they will see Krishna everywhere, in everything, everything for his service and satisfaction, and with a loving, divine, ecstatic love that will bring about a completely different reality. They're no longer living within the rules and the boundaries and parameters of material, mundane consciousness and nature. Completely aloof and transcendental to that. So what's internal and external is becomes seamless. But for us here, as humble, aspiring devotees, we cannot count too much on the differentiations. We're so far from reality at this present stage. A lot of us, most of us, it's very rare to have that type of transcendental consciousness. But for us as practitioners, we need the guru without. We know the guru within is also existing, but we're out of touch with it. So we need to approach the guru without, the diksha guru, the shiksha guru. Then we will have some opportunity to cultivate that internal world by their grace and develop in our consciousness and our divine vision that will come by their grace. Okay.
Back to Gurudev. We heard that prasadam was very important for him.
Yes.
And I was wondering, like, when did he discover that your special diet? Did you told him? And we heard about Gosai Maharaj likes to tell that when you always had to show him what mm-hmm. you were eating.
Yes.
The beginning of this.
Well, for the first 5 years when I lived in India, I took all the prasadam and lived in, you know, a more austere manner, not keeping any money, not even having money for toothpaste, using salt, and I couldn't tolerate money. When I first came, I couldn't deal with it, and I gave it all to Gurudev. Sometimes he'd give back for the transportation or something. But then, after some years in India, my health was a little compromised and taxed, mainly from the pollution. They have serious pollution issues in India. Arsenic, cadmium, lead, aluminum, different types of pollutants made me sick, and I had to do something. I was staying in India, especially Calcutta, living in a very polluted environment. Then a naturopathic doctor recommended a particular diet that I should follow. So I tried, and I couldn't take all the prasadam, and we had one fridge, and that was in front of him, in his veranda. So we could all use the fridge, but we'd have to walk in front of him with whatever we had. And he always wanted to inspect, what is there? What do you have? What are you going to eat? Give me some. So, yes, Goswami Maharaj tells that story. I can see your Lord is Krishna. He's joking that I'm just living off of grass like a cow. I think I had lettuce in the bag. I don't remember. But sometimes I would bring whatever I made to him to taste, and he would say, very natural, and definitely not his style. And he was very mercifully accommodating and allowing us to do what we needed to be well, to stay there, to endure whatever it was that was difficult for us. So his style of prasadam was very Bengali, deep fried, full of masala and chilies and mustard oil. And he loved all the different types of curries and pakoras and samosas and luchi. That was his style of eating. And when his health was showing some difficulty, the doctor gave him a choice. He was diabetic and trying to control his blood sugar through medicine, just like tablets, but his blood sugar started going higher and higher. So he had a choice. You can continue your medicine, your tablets, with diet control, or you have to take insulin injections. And he chose insulin because diet control was just impossible. Not an option for him. So he loved to eat and would always ask, what shall I eat? He'd sit with a room full of devotees and ask everyone what he should eat. And everyone would make these suggestions and everyone would become hungry. And he'd always say, no, not that. And one devotee, his name is Padmanabha Maharaj, his name was Ratan, he could always give the right answer, what Gurudev should eat. But we would suggest things, no, not that. But Padmanabha Maharaj would go in the kitchen and bring him out just exactly what he wanted. And he was a good cook. Gurudev knew how to cook. And he would, before every meal, his cooks would come, what do you want? And he would tell them what he wanted and how he wanted it, how to make it exactly. So he also liked pizza and some Western things, French fries, ice cream. Vanilla ice cream. Vanilla with a B. In India, V and B are the same, especially in Bengal. So, vanilla ice cream was his all-time favorite. And we always offer that on his Vyasa Puja, some vanilla ice cream. We liked pizza. We've been to Pizza Hut with him before. One time I really kind of repulsed him. We were at Pizza Hut and I wasn't eating dairy products and they ordered this like extra cheese pizza. This was in St. Petersburg with Avadhut Maharaj. And they gave me a piece and I took the cheese off. And Gurudev was just like so disgusted by that. And kept talking about it. But she took her cheese off the pizza and it looked like, and he started saying, like, it looked like intestines and gross things. He knew how to play with us and how to make fun of us. I remember once he taught us how to make whole mung dal, and he taught us how that's Nityananda Prabhu's, one of his all-time favorite preparations, very thick mung dal, the whole mung, soaking, washing in a pressure cooker, putting all the spices except the seed chantas that you put in later. And cooking it very slowly for many hours. And then when it's time to do the chants, the oil, the ghee, and the different spices like cumin and coriander and kalonji, and putting all the spices in the hot oil, then throwing in the spoon into the pressure cooker and covering it as quickly as possible. Then all the aromatic flavors of the spices would go into the dal. He gave like a half an hour class about this. Someone made it exactly like he said, it was the best dal in the world. And Nityananda Prabhu likes that with muri. In Bengal, there's so many special things they make that are very much, they're very auspicious and have connection to the Lord, Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu's favorite things. And we can say Gurudev was the king of foodies. We say someone who loves food is a foodie. But he was the king. Okay.
And on his world tours, he preferred Bengali prasadam, or he liked the prasadam of that place, or both?
He preferred his Bengali prasadam, and he could taste other things. He always had a servant with him, one of the Bengali devotees, as his servant, and they would prepare what he wanted, and then what other devotees prepared in supplement they would offer. He would taste it, sometimes touch it and lick his finger. Sometimes he really liked some of the things, like macaroni and cheese and different things. He couldn't believe the halava, the way Western devotees make halava. He was completely shocked by that, because in India they just use a tiny little bit of sugar and a little bit of oil or ghee or butter. But in the West it's like half butter, half suji, farina, and then like tons of sugar. And he was just like blown away by that. And another thing he would get really shocked by, and he still, he made so much effort to teach us never to mix salt with milk or cream. And a lot of times the devotees wouldn't know this and make him things, and he'd always ask, what is in here? He'd suspect there's some milk, maybe cream of something, soup, and wouldn't touch it. There were some things that we all had to learn, sometimes the hard way, push it away, reject our offerings, because they weren't suitable. But we always had so much luggage when we traveled with him, because half the luggage was food. All of his particular rice that he needed for the whole tour, we'd bring that, spices, milk powder from, you know, Bangor Avenue, Dum Dum Park. One time, when we were going into Venezuela, they found Gurudev's milk powder, and it kind of opened, the bag opened and it got everywhere, and the customs officers thought it was cocaine and pulled aside the servant of Gurudev, and going through this all this milk powder everywhere and getting really stressed out and going for testing it, and the servant of Gurudev was getting all upset because the milk powder was spilling all over the floor, and he was like, this is my milk powder and I brought it all the way from India. And they were not communicating, this custom officer and the servant. Then finally they realized it's milk powder, it's not cocaine, and like let this little Bengali boy go. Misunderstanding there in Caracas Airport. They deal with a lot of drug issues and cocaine, and so they check every bag before every flight. So that was funny. But we always had so many bags, and Gurudev would have his normal prasadam at normal time, even though half the time we're on a completely different schedule, flying across the world, landing somewhere at a strange time. He'd have his normal routine immediately. We land, we go to his room, take a bath, take prasadam, take rest, no matter what time it was. Very regulated. I remember once he was sick and we were in Govardhan, and it was like July, the middle of the most hottest time of the year. Vrindavan gets extremely hot. And we were there, and Siddhanti Marsh spent all day and night pouring water on the roof, which was above Gurudev's room, to keep it cool. He would spend all day filling buckets and pouring the water on Gurudev's roof, trying to keep the room cooler. And Gurudev was very sick, and the doctors told him he could not eat rice and not eat milk products. And the best thing for him is just like vegetable stew, mixed vegetables, like soup. So he told me, if you cook, I'll feel better. You please make this for me. And so I went, and I wouldn't let them cook rice for him. And I was cooking in the kitchen. It was so hot, like unbelievably hot. I've never felt such heat in my life. And I brought him his vegetable stew. And he was like very disappointed to see no rice, no nothing fried, and nothing of his normal food, only this, and the most depressed face in the world. And behind me came his servant with rice. They cooked somewhere else, prepared his food, and brought it to him right behind me. Then he was happy. Even though the doctor said and maybe he'd get more sick, he still had to eat his typical lunch. But it was so hot in that kitchen. It was hot outside, hotter in the kitchen. And I prepared that. And I went out of his room and completely blacked out, fainted. And I woke up with devotees fanning me in my room. One of those experiences. Glad I did it, but it's definitely an austerity and maybe not, maybe I didn't make him feel better, but he asked and I tried. He couldn't follow the diet. You just had to be flexible with him. Whatever he wanted, you try to do it to the best of your ability. No strings attached. So we have to become flexible in our spiritual lives. Be ready for anything. So this was all very good training, and still going on. Yes?
Question came from internet. You have been mentioned flexibility. You've become flexible living with Gurudev. In its original state, the soul is super flexible and ready to do anything for the Lord's enjoyment.
That's right. What flexibility we may receive in our training from our guru here, that is helpful for us in our approach to the infinite, to the service of the Lord. We have to become flexible to enter into the realm of the Lord, into the service plane of the Lord. So some training is happening here for us. We're being recruited into that plane. And this is like boot camp. We're here like soldiers learning how to serve and to satisfy the whims of Guru and Gauranga. We hear Krishna moves in a crooked way, not in a straightforward way. So maybe snake is a rope is a snake, go this way, go that way. according to the divine flow, we move accordingly. And that takes flexibility. We can't say, no, it's not a snake. It's a rope, Gurudev. No, that's not how it works. Go with the flow, become flexible, and will become eligible to enter into that divine realm, which is moving in a zigzag way, where the Lord moves in a zigzag way. So we can be thankful for whatever we have to go through in our service to make us flexible. It will be helpful for us.